He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council producing. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena. Julian Council back at the studio. We are getting you all sorts of ready as Colorado comes to town tonight. Colorado unexpectedly having a very good year. They'll come to town tonight. Adam Vingan going to join us at 9:30. We'll get Vingan's thoughts on everything Preds related as what he's seen so far and what he expects to see tonight. Also, a little bit of a hot route, a little bit of an audible call. Cameron Wolf, ESPN Titans reporter, going to join us in just a few minutes. So we'll visit with Cameron in about 10 minutes or so. So we'll get with Cameron Wolf in just a few minutes to break down Monday Night Football. Adam Vingan then after that to break down all things Preds as we continue to give you the best coverage we can of what is a huge couple of days in sports around Nashville. Continuing the debate we were just having, we got the call and the question of you know why Vols fans expect what they expect. I think that this to me this always comes down to a generational discussion. It depends on how old you are. It depends on what you've seen, because what you've seen is going to grossly skew whatever your perception is of a sport or a team or
a player.
Yeah, for sure.
If you grew up watching, and I hate to use O.J. Simpson as an example, or Jim Brown, two guys that sort of changed.
Sonny never even realized O.J. Simpson played football.
But like, if you grew up as like a 15-year-old watching Jim Brown or a 15-year-old watching O.J. Simpson, you saw things that no one had ever done before. And then I grew up watching Barry Sanders going, oh my God, I've never seen anything done like Barry Sanders and LaDainian Tomlinson. And now the next generation is going Leonard Fournette and Todd Gurley. You know, like that's absolutely a very normal thing. But I think your point about how it's covered and how social media impacts everything is obviously unbelievably huge and a huge factor. You know, you only get 3 years now. Instead, in the 80s, you got 5 years to win and before you got fired or whatever it may be. But I don't agree with that the cycling of sports changes over time. You just can't be elite all the time. You're going to you know, we joked yesterday about the Packers, right, having two great quarterbacks. Like, I'm super lucky that since 92 to now, we've had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in the Green Bay Packers. There will be a time when the Packers are bad, and I'm going to have to deal with that. My family's going to have to deal with that because it's just sort of the nature of the game. Texas has had the last nine seasons, Texas, one of the most powerful athletic departments in the entire world that will never not be a powerful program. It will always be a big-time program. They've had one nine-win season in the last 10 years. That's why Mack Brown and Charlie Strong got fired. That's a 10-year run of irrelevance for Texas, and Texas is the most powerful program in college football. Michigan had a 7-year run where they only had one good season under Brady Hoke, and it cost two coaches their jobs. I mean, that's what happens. And so Tennessee has had a 9- or 10-year run now where there's been a couple of 9-win seasons and a couple of bowl seasons, but largely they've been irrelevant in the East. And that is why you're going to go through your fourth coach. That's why you're going to fire a third coach in a 6-year or 7-year period of time. And that's just the nature of the game. Alabama had some downswings under Mike Shula. If Michigan, Alabama, and Texas can have downswings, then so can Tennessee. And that means they're all going to come back eventually. So it's all about look how they fixed Michigan. Jim Harbaugh. They went and got a stud. Look how they fixed Alabama. They went and got Nick Saban. Unfortunately for Tennessee fans, there's just nobody out there that's like that right now.
Well, a couple of things. One, the Michigan fan base is already starting to get impatient with Nick Saban.
Which is stupid, by the way.
But stupid or not, I mean, it's an inevitable part of the culture that we live in. Now, it's the same group of people that I've said over the course of the last few weeks as a Raiders fan, the number of times I see people tweet that Jack Del Rio should be fired and they should cut Derek Carr. It's amazing. It's a weekly occurrence.
That's not rational, right?
But that's the real mindset of football fans now. So and yeah, I looked it up. I confirmed it. There's one winning season in the SEC in the last decade. And there's a point where the way sports are covered now, the way social media exists, the lack of patience given around it, the marketing aspect of every single sport where you're sitting here and you're looking at it and saying, okay, you know, CBS has got to care about the game. CBS cares so little about the Alabama-Tennessee game, as I've heard from several of my friends, that it's now buried at 2:30 in the afternoon, and that's not a night game, and it's not an important game. And
well, that's the prime time slot for SEC football.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the number one slot.
The where is the magic of making it like a big deal?
There's nothing.
But there isn't to you, but there are to people, and that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a point where there's a whole group of people out there that are Vols fans, and if you're a 30-year-old Vols fan, you haven't seen a national championship since you were 10. So it's hard to come in and say, yeah, there's a viable chance that this team can win a national championship. It sure doesn't feel like it if you're, you know, and I'll go back to some of the guys I was with this weekend that are in their mid-30s. The last time they saw the Vols win a national championship, they were in high school. So you can say all day that there's a DNA for a program, but if you're 35 and the last time you saw a win was a national championship win was in high school, it certainly doesn't feel like there's DNA for that.
Well, and that's a great valid point from a feeling standpoint, but the reality just that just doesn't match reality. If you're a Michigan fan and you're 60, you've seen one national championship in 50 years. If you're a Texas fan and you're 50, you've seen one national championship in 50 years. There's just a certain element of, like, you just don't win these all the time. If you're a USC fan, you've seen one and a half national championships in 35 or 40 years. Penn State fans have seen one national – Penn State's a monster program with all the things you'd ever need to win a national title. And Penn State fans will tell you that they should have won it in 93 when they went undefeated, and that's a different story. But they only have the one in 86. Since 86, they haven't won a national title. Nebraska fans haven't seen anything close to contention since 1997. So there's just – everyone, my point is not about Tennessee in particular. It's more about all of these, with the exception of Nick Saban, Alabama, and really Ohio State. Ohio State's the one program that's proven over multiple coaches, over multiple generations, that they are just this dominant force in the Big Ten that's lasted forever. Notre Dame's had huge downswells over the last 15 years. It's just the nature of the game, and it all goes back to coaching. And Lane Kiffin, Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, two of them will get fired because they weren't good enough. And Lane Kiffin was whatever Lane Kiffin was. He was a mess who left on his own. It's about finding the right coach. And if you put Nick Saban at Tennessee, he would win 11 games a year and win national championships. And that's sort of what I mean when I say national title DNA. If you put Nick Saban at all these programs, could he win national titles? I don't think Nick Saban can win a national title at Mississippi State or Vanderbilt. But if you put him at Tennessee, he wins all kinds of national championships.
I'll say I think that Nick Saban can win a national championship wherever he goes. I mean, I think he's
Nichols State.
I think he's just flat out better than everybody, and has found the magic sauce. I think that you're right. Obviously, the national championships are hard to win. Conference championships become all the more important to teams in that era, and that's part of why people are already disenfranchised with Harbaugh. It's not about national championships. It's about beating Michigan State, and it's about, you know, winning a conference championship. That's a piece of this equation too, and that's another piece of the equation that, unfortunately, when you're in the same conference as Nick Saban, that doesn't become an easy thing to do. But it doesn't make it any easier for Vols fans. That's why I think that there is a large contingency of Vols fans that have just accepted that what Tennessee is okay.
I think that's why Butch Jones is getting fired. If they were okay with okay, then Butch Jones wouldn't be getting fired.
I think
he would be fine because they have been just okay lately.
Jones won 9 games and finished in second place, he'd still have a job. I don't think he'd get fired.
Well, and this is
there's
no question this is a unique year. Like, it's a down year and he's not getting the job done, and there's other circumstances. I agree. But Georgia has won national championship in the last 45 years, and that was 1981. Clemson has won national championship in the last 35 years.
Yeah, we already addressed that. But I'm saying that ultimately Tennessee, there's a large group of Tennessee fans that are sitting here saying, hey, 9 wins. We had the discussion going into the season. If they won 8 or 9 wins, would Butch Jones keep his job? And it was, well, probably, definitely at 9, probably at 8. You know, that's if they finished at second place in the East, that he's going to keep his job. You know? And that's far from a national championship expectation for a team.
Certainly, but you're losing all the – that's a cycle, again, down year with all the players leaving. Like, that happens at every program. Tennessee is a national championship caliber program, and that is the truth. And
I just totally disagree with that. I think Tennessee is a good, not great football program in a great conference in a bad piece of time. And can they pop up and win a national championship? Sure, if everybody else quits ahead of them, sure they can. But I don't see that. I don't see that happening. So we'll continue the debate as we always do on this. But we're going to switch gears and get back to Monday Night Football. Cameron Wolf, ESPN Titans reporter, going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on what he saw last night. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz coming at you live inside the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Getting you caught up, obviously, on last night and get you set for tonight, doing a little bit of both. Adam Vingan from the Tennessean going to join us in just a few minutes. We'll get his thoughts on all things Preds. But before we get there, from ESPN covers the Titans. Cameron Wolf joins us. Cameron, thanks for some time this morning, man. When you look back on what you saw last night, difference between the first half and the second half, what really stood out to you in the team's ability to change up what they were doing in the second half?
Yeah, at first I'll look on the defensive side of the ball, and that probably gets lost a little bit in the way Marcus played, but they made some adjustments as far as sending some more blitzes, tighter coverage, more pressure. They look like a really strong defensive unit in the second half, and you got to give a lot of credit to the defensive backs. They get a lot of blame when things go wrong, and they played really well last night. Logan Ryan had a great game. They felt like they made T.Y. Hilton disappear. He had one catch for 19 yards, and this is probably one of the NFL's best receivers coming in. So they did a great job covering him, covering on the back end. And, you know, this defensive unit really buckled down in the second half, forcing three and outs and letting the offense heat up.
Well, you look at the offense, and certainly we'll address Marcus, but I wanted to see them sort of lean on that offensive line on a Colts defense that might have been the worst that they faced to date in the regular season. And while they weren't picking up big chunks, obviously the 72-yard run skews the stats. I like seeing 35 touches between the two of them before that last run for 160 yards. I feel like that should be the exact game plan that they employ every single weekend.
Yeah, I was just looking at the snap count reps, and Derrick Henry actually out-snapped DeMarco Murray, but this wasn't a game where you could see DeMarco Murray complaining because he got plenty of touches as well, both in the run game and in the receiving game out of the backfield. So I think this is the type of performance, you know, comparison-wise, that you know, for both of the backs that you want to see going forward, both guys getting, you know, 15-plus touches. And you being able to lean on Derrick Henry late on games to force a tired defense to tackle him. And that's not something teams want to do. And we saw that on a 72-yard run. It was something where he finally got outside the edge and the Colts were just done. And I know a lot of fans and sometimes us in the media, we see them run into, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And we're like, why don't they change it up? That's why. Because, you know, you keep depending and keep leaning on the run game. Something will eventually pop. Defenses get worn down. And if that's your identity, you do that, even if it's not pretty.
We're talking to Cameron Wolf, ESPN Titans reporter. So, Cameron, when you think about what we saw from Marcus Mariota last night, let's take a negative and make it a positive here. Obviously, the injury limited his mobility, but he looked really effective just standing in the pocket and throwing a football. Do you think that seeing that is some sort of a piece of progression that means he's going to play a different style as the year goes on, or was that just sort of an aberration?
No, I could see him, and he won't admit it, but I could see him gaining confidence throughout the game, you know, based on him being able to be effective solely with his arm and not needing to move outside the pocket. He only had one throw outside of the pocket last night, and it was a throwaway. All 360 of his yards came inside the pocket, and that's something he hasn't had to do in his entire career. You could see him slowing down his feet, processing things a little better, and making accurate, stronger throws, particularly to the boundary area. So I think this was the best game that he's played so far. Some could argue the Seattle game based on opponent, but this was really, you know, a game where he gutted out a performance where he wasn't 100%, but he looked like every bit of a pocket passing quarterback that a lot of these franchise, these teams have in their franchise quarterback.
Special teams, Cameron. Last year, this team was awful, so much so that they fired their special teams coach by week three, I think. It appears that from a punter, kicker, return specialist standpoint, they're as good as anybody in the NFL. Still got some things penalty-wise they need to work out, but do you see that trio being as good as anybody else in the league right now?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not a big tracking punters and kickers throughout the league, but it'd be hard to see, you know, another grouping, you know, performing as well. I know Ryan Succop, he made himself some money last night and throughout the year. It's a contract year for him, and he seemed like he's Mr. Automatic. So I know him and his agent were probably having a good time last night. You know, Brett Kern has been really solid in that game as well. You haven't had to hear Bo Brinkley's name, which is always good for a long snapper. And you even saw a spurt from Madory Jackson in the kick return game, although it kind of goes It kind of has been heckle and jive in that area, but you saw that spurt. So I think, you know, they'd love to get back that kick return that the Colts took deep into their zone last night. But otherwise, they've been much improved in the special teams area, and that's helping them, you know, put up points when they need it.
We're talking to Cameron Wolf from ESPN. So, Cameron, right now, according to NFL.com, you're looking at a Titans team that, through all the tiebreakers and everything, sits at first place in the division. From your eye test, does it look like a first-place football team to you?
I think it looks like the AFC South, no matter what the team looks like. I think this team still has some things to work out. I don't think we can crown them based on one performance against a Colts team without Andrew Luck. I think this was promising. I think this was something that you needed to see. I think we would have had a different vibe this morning if they would have won ugly 17-16 and they didn't really play well. I think the offensive resurgence in the second half and the defensive second straight week where the defense played well, particularly in the second half, gives you a lot of optimism. You go against Cleveland next week, you think you win that game. You know, nothing's a gimme in the NFL, but you think that's a game you should win, and then you go into your bye week 4-3, at least tied for first place in the AFC South, and the back end of your schedule is really manageable. So you say, okay, maybe this team can still hit all of their goals and expectations that, you know, we thought they could hit coming into the season. So I still think there's some growing pains that need to go through, and there's some things they need to get better at. But I think they're right in the mix to be where they need to be.
Hey, Cameron, if they survive the Cleveland game without a large injury of some sort, which obviously is a big concern, it's a game they should win as a franchise and as a team. And then they get into the bye week. Does this team look like it could be as healthy as it's been all season when they come back from that bye?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right, because, you know, don't forget you got Corey Davis coming back, whether it's this week or right after the bye. Jonathan Cyprian, the starting safety that you've missed since week one, he's going to be back sometime after the bye. So you get two starters back on that end. And like you mentioned, if there's no other significant injuries, you come into after the bye where you have all 22 of your starters healthy. And I'm not sure how many NFL teams can say that. And, you know, that's something that really makes a difference as you go into November and December. It's, you know, the NFL's a war of attrition. And if your team is still standing strong at many of its core positions, then you're going to have an advantage down the stretch, particularly with the type of football that they like to play.
How much impact, Corey, do you think that Cameron, do you think Corey can have? You see, I got all flustered there. How much impact do you think
Corey? I think Cameron's going to have a huge impact on the second half of the season.
Yeah, Cameron, you're going to get out there and run some routes for Corey. No, so with him missing all the practice time he's missed, how much impact do you think he can have realistically when he comes in?
Well, yeah, I think he'll have a bigger impact than me at the very least. I think he'll have a big impact. I think the big thing for him is he's got to stay healthy. I hope they really make sure the hamstring is 100% before they push him out there. Because, you know, you look at a scenario where another tweak of that hamstring, he could be, you know, that could be putting him on the shelf for the rest of the year. And you don't want that. We saw in that first game, he had missed all of camp, all of preseason, and he came in and had a really strong game. And I think that just shows his pure talent, his ability to make plays. And I know he's been in the playbook. I talk to him weekly. And he's ready to get back out there. So I think he can really establish himself on the second end of the season as the Titans, you know, at least 1B receiver to Rishard Matthews, wide receiver, and really open up the Titans offense even more and give them more downfield threats. So I think, you know, Marcus, all the Titans, you know, Terry Rubisky, are eager to get him back in the lineup and to force defenses to play them even more conservatively as far as their passing game.
It's fantastic stuff, guys. You can read him on ESPN.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Cameron Wolf. Cameron, thanks for the time this morning, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
Great stuff from Cameron Wolf there as he breaks it down, and he talks to Corey Davis every week, and I think it's exciting. I mean, it's going to be exciting to see what Corey Davis can come in and do. Speaking of exciting, always exciting to hang out with Adam Vingan. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to get over to a little Preds talk as we get you ready for tonight's big game against Colorado. We'll see what Vingan thinks of the season so far and what he thinks could happen tonight. We'll do all that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. It's Braden and Fitz on ESPN. 102.5 The Game. Braden, any fun advice on things people can do pregame today?
Oh, thank you for asking.
You're
Fitzy,
welcome.
That is so nice of you. The Honky Tonk Hat Trick is back tonight
from 5 to 6:30 at Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Tonk Central. Of course, the whole thing brought to you by Bud Light. Stop by any of these locations before a Predators weekday home game. Any point during the season, Predators weekday home games, weekday home games for specials on Bud Light, as well as a chance to win a pair of tickets to a Predators game in the future, the very next home game. You'll be able to win tickets to that. You guys know how tough the tickets are to come by right now today, so any chance you can get to win an opportunity to get into the building is a good one. And one of your best chances, of course, is obviously listening to Braden Fitz, but also going to the Honky Tonk Hat Trick. You can also register to win a VIP hockey experience, which includes dinner for two, tickets to the upcoming game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission. And I'm not really sure what's better than a ride on the Zamboni during intermission at a Predators game.
It's literally
like witnessing the birth of your first child.
Yeah.
It's pretty much awesome. I'll be at Honky Tonk Central today starting at 5 o'clock, so come on down, have a couple beers. We'll be giving away some tickets and some free stuff.
Free stuff! So that's always a good time. That's going to be
fantastic. Yeah, come on down.
Fantastic. Speaking of always a fantastic time, Adam Vingan from the Tennessean joins us. Adam, thanks for giving us some time this morning, man. We appreciate it and giving us your thoughts. So as we sit with Colorado coming in tonight, is what so far early on in the season has really stood out to you as a surprise for the Preds?
That's a good question. I think the obvious answer is the play of Sam Girard. You look at this league now, 19, 20, 21 years old, a lot of players are coming in and having success at that age. I was talking to Colin Wilson yesterday, who's back with the Avalanche tonight at Bridgestone Arena. He's turning 28 later this week. He's actually, I think, the fourth or fifth oldest player on the Avalanche. And he said that looking around the league now, guys my age are considered old. That used to not be the case. So Sam Girard, 19 years old, seems to have a lot of poise for a teenager. I certainly was not that poised or polished at 19 years old. His teammates have been very impressed with him. The coaching staff has been impressed with him. I think what they were looking for in the preseason was how he handled defensive matchups against tough competition. They knew that he had a lot of offensive skill, but early in the preseason, you're playing a lot of pretty barren lineups in terms of NHL caliber talent. But as the preseason continues, and the cuts are made around the league during training camp, the full-time rosters sort of present themselves, and they wanted to see how Sam handled himself in those situations, and he did well enough for him to make the team. So I think that has been a pleasant surprise. You certainly can't replace what Ryan Ellis has and won't have on the ice for a couple of months. But he has a lot of similar traits to Ryan Ellis in terms of the way he likes to move the puck and his poise and his intelligence. So I do think that Sam Girard is probably the most obvious surprise.
Well, and skating ability like Roman Josi, frankly. I mean, he's an excellent skater, and that's what Josi does. And I think lost in the offensive conversation, Adam, that we've had about this team maybe struggling to score this season so far, is that Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis were big parts of the offense as well, not just the defense. They activate that whole thing. How close are give us an injury update on Roman Josi, Nick Bonino. What do we expect? Are these what are the timetables? I know hockey, it's just sort of a guess at this point, but what do you think the timetables are for those guys?
Well, Roman Josi has been practicing and skating during morning skates for the last several days. He practiced again yesterday. I spoke to him briefly. He said that he's feeling better. I asked him if he'd be able to play this week. They have three games this week, tonight at home against Colorado, Thursday on the road against Philadelphia, and Saturday afternoon on the road against the New York Rangers. And he said that he's hopeful that he'll be able to play at some point this week, but didn't know to be sure. He probably does know, but just didn't want to say anything to me, which I understand. That's, you know, part of his job and part of my job to ask, but did say that he was feeling better. And the fact that he has been regularly practicing is probably an encouraging sign in terms of his return to the lineup. But as for Nick Bonino, it's a bit nebulous right now. He left the game on Saturday. I saw him in the locker room after the game. He didn't have any sort of support in terms of crutches or a cast or anything that I saw, but he was limping. I saw him leave the arena yesterday. He didn't practice, and I saw him leave the arena with what I thought was a small ankle brace on his left ankle. And remember that he suffered a fractured left tibia during the Stanley Cup final and missed the entire preseason recovering from that injury. So the Predators' official status is that he's quote-unquote undergoing further evaluation. I have no idea what that means. in terms of, that's very much PR speak, but the Predators, of course, have a morning skate in less than an hour. It'll probably be optional, and then maybe we'll get an update. That's what they said. But I was watching back the game from Saturday night about the time around where his last shift ended, Nick Bonino's, and he was chasing a puck behind the Predators' net, seemed to lose his balance. His left leg took the brunt of the blow into the boards. It wasn't a really hard blow, but you could see as the camera was cutting away that he was in some discomfort. So I'm wondering, though I do not now know to be sure, I'm wondering if he aggravated his prior injury in some way.
We're talking to Adam Vingan from the Tennessean. So, Adam, your thoughts, obviously, offensive scoring is something that we have been keeping an eye on. When we had you on this summer and there were all sorts of trade rumors, I asked you pretty definitively, would you trade a top four defenseman for a scoring star? And your answer was pretty definitively no at the time. Now that we've seen the season start, has anything changed in your mind in that sense?
It's still too early, to be honest. I mean, 5-6 games is too much of it's too small of a sample size to make any sort of definitive conclusions in terms of whether or not I think they need some help. If Nick Bonino is out for a lengthy period of time, perhaps you look at that, but they also have internal options. They can call up either Vladislav Kamenev or Freddie Goudreau from the American Hockey League. Of course, tonight the Predators are playing the Colorado Avalanche, and there's a certain player on the other side who wears number 9 who is not happy with his current situation that fans are salivating to have. Matthew Shane's playing quite well for the Avalanche, who have won 4 games already this season. And considering the fact that they were the worst team in the league by a country mile last season, you have to imagine that the Avalanche aren't just going to hand him off if he's playing well and the team is playing well. You know, I thought that, and I'm not sure exactly if I talked to you before or after the Ryan Ellis news came down, but I feel like Ryan Ellis's injury sort of, I wouldn't say disqualifies the Predators from making a trade off of their roster, but I certainly think it's not as likely because of that. You know, Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet, who, for those who are listening who don't follow hockey as religiously as we do, is sort of like the Adam Schefter of the NHL, reported last week that the Avalanche may start to scout players, teams, other teams' prospects at the minor league level, junior level, at the college level. Perhaps maybe the Avalanche, if they're looking for a trade partner, are going to start looking for prospects and futures instead of roster players. So that isn't to say that the Predators and the Avalanche are going to make some backroom deal tonight. But I still do not believe that the Predators need to make a huge trade right now. But they do need their young players who were tasked this summer with boosting the offense to step up, like Kevin Fiala and Pontus Aberg. They need to show up. Craig Smith, who's played well this season, in my opinion, needs to start putting some goals in. They need to start getting goals from guys from the secondary scorers. I mean, Sky Hartnell's been great. That's good. But, you know, Philip Forsberg is on a goal-per-game pace, and he can't do that all by himself. So he needs others to help out.
Real quickly, Vingan, we sort of had a discussion earlier in the show today. Really would never be surprised at any point during the season if UC Saros gets a start, even in a non-traditional sort of backup situation. Is that just sort of the way Predators fans need to view this goaltending situation? Is that just sort of be prepared for either one at on any given night and really not be that worried about it?
Yeah, I think so. And I talked to Pecorine before the game on Saturday morning in Chicago for a story that was in today's Tennessee and online yesterday. You know, Pecorine, you know, he understands what his role is now. He's still the starter on this team. That's not going to change. But the UC Saros is going to probably get more starts this year. The angle of the story was about how this team has a big championship window, but they have a smaller 2-year window that coincides with what remains of Pecorine's contract. And he told me that, you know, it certainly gives him peace of mind that the teams, that the players, the key pieces are still going to be there for a long time. But he looks at it as him having this year and next year. And he knows that UC Saros is earning playing time as well. So I do think this is very much Pecorino's crease still and will continue to be. But, yes, I do imagine that UC Saros, who started 19 games last season, should creep over the 20-start mark this season and play in more situations to give Pekka more rest.
It's fantastic stuff, guys. You can read him on the Tennessee and check out the article on Pekka. It's really good. Also follow him on Twitter at Adam Vingan. Oh, as I just, you know, throw things
playoff at him. Adam Vingan.
As at Adam Vingan. Adam, we appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on.
Anytime, thanks.
Playoff Adam Vingan, man.
Yeah, he's straight.
He's in playoff form.
He's solid. There's nobody covering it better. So great work from Adam, obviously. When we come back, we'll break down a little bit of what to expect tonight. And obviously, something happens in the world of sports tonight that not a lot of you are even paying attention to, but it's kind of awesome. We'll tell you what it is next. Brayden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Playoff Colin Wilson.
Julian Council is back at the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Link and Mount Juliet. Brayden, Kevin Kyle, and I
are
down at the Jack Daniels Burl House Saloon inside.
My name is Nick.
Inside Bridgestone Arena as Colorado comes to town. Something cool happening in sports tonight. Cool to me. We'll tell you what it is in just a few minutes. First, I have to ask you
a question. I'm waiting with bated breath,
Fitzy. I know, but we got to talk Preds first. Okay. My question to you is if a Colin Wilson plays in a game.
and nobody hears it. that is mean-spirited, sir.
Oh, man.
That is mean-spirited.
You know, should we give Colin Wilson the same response in the arena that he gave us when he comes in? Just, you know, indifferent sort of, it's there.
I, you know what it'll be? I think it'll be a smattering.
A smattering.
It'll be not a smattering of boos, a smattering of applause when he takes the ice. Now, if he
scores a low effort
applause. I told you, it's smattering.
Yeah,
it'll be very inconsistent applause.
So many really loud for a second, then really quiet for a long time. crowd would disappear for long periods of time.
Won't even know the crowd's in the building for a long stretch of tonight's game. No.
Can they call him Casper, like, just because he's the friendly ghost? Friendly ghost. Casper's a friendly ghost, you know? Friendly ghost disappears.
Eight seasons over 500 games here, which I think is – I would never have guessed. Like, just if you would have told me, guess how many games he played or how many years he played here. He's 28 years old. He played eight seasons. It's pretty amazing. But
noticed in four of them, but go ahead.
It just keeps coming.
The hits keep coming.
The dead horse, and I've got the baseball bat. I'm just going to hit it. No, listen, there's no chance you treat him like – you treat any of the other the names like the Rattle-Offs and the Jimmy VZs and the Ryan Suters of the world. There's no chance he belongs in that category. He didn't do anything bad while he was here or to leave the program. And none of that stuff.
No.
He just was, to your point, and as we joke a little bit here, he just wasn't as big a factor as Preds fans would have liked, and certainly very inconsistent and didn't deliver over the course of 82-game seasons. But he also delivered a lot of big-time moments in the postseason. When it does count the most, he did show up in some big games and have some big moments. So I think there will be a relative amount of respect for him if he gets on the ice. Now, if he scores a goal, though, and it's a regular season goal at Bridgestone Arena, it'll be interesting to see the reaction, because there's going to be kind of like a come on, dude, like, why couldn't you do that for us kind of thing. So we make fun of playoff Colin Wilson, but he wants a fresh start. He got his fresh start. It sounds like there was the meeting when he left the organization, that there was a lot of conversation between David Poile and the coaching staff in the front office with him, saying, listen, we love you, man, but you need a fresh start. He sort of agrees he needed a fresh start. So it's sort of the best for everybody. And it worked out for him. And frankly, I think it worked out for the Predators. I think they could do better with that slot on the roster.
I mean, as much as we can, I think this is a win for everybody. And sometimes we've talked about this ad nauseum with Kevin Dodd and the Titans, and sort of my thought is that at some point, guys just maybe need a fresh start, new voice, new people in their head, and new people to try and get the best out of them. And Floyd always says it doesn't matter what they do at their next stop. It mattered what they did at their last one.
Right.
And so I look at this much the same. As much as we joke, I wish nothing but the best for Colin Wilson. He wasn't going to get it done here, so – the fact that he's moved on, maybe he can get it done somewhere else, and maybe somebody new can come into his slot and pick up the slack. Here,
and Kevin Dodd, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's played a year and a third of a season. Colin Wilson had 8 years to prove it. So it's not like we don't know exactly what it was.
We know exactly what Colin Wilson is. So that'll be interesting to see tonight. Speaking of things that are interesting to see tonight, want to remind everybody, I know this sounds crazy, the NBA regular season starts tonight.
Didn't the season end yesterday?
Well, hockey fans have no room to talk on that one. I think it is the earliest that the season has started in the NBA since 1980.
There was something unknown about the hockey season, though, i.e. who was going to win the Stanley Cup.
That's fair. That's fair.
We knew Golden State was going to win the whole thing at the beginning of the season. Just like we do today, as you said in the update, they are literally favored in every single regular season game that has been scheduled so far. So barring like a broken leg for somebody, which obviously nobody wishes and we hope not, they are going to, if you are going to gamble on the Golden State Warriors, you're going to have to lay points in every single game that they play during the regular season, which is astonishing. Now, I'm fascinated by the Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, like, because nobody builds drama better than the NBA off the court, right?
Right.
Like,
that's why people are pumped. Yeah.
The NFL is the king of this. Now, the NFL always has been the king of building drama, but I think people are sort of tired of that drama. The drama right now is, oh, my God, is LeBron James going to play or not? Of course he's going to play. It's Kyrie Irving coming back. Are you kidding me? Of course he's going to play. He wants to dunk on his head tonight. It's going to be great.
And, God, the last
Isaiah thing. Thomas and the Celtics, that game is awesome. I can't wait for that game.
The last thing the NBA wants is to start the season with the conversation about how worthless the regular season is. So,
hey, it's never too early to start resting for the playoffs.
Oh, my God.
LeBron, it's got a long season. You've got to be healthy for the rest of the season.
We should point out that the reason that the season is starting the earliest that it started since 1980 is because Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, went in and said, hey, I'm listening to you guys. They've spaced the game out. They've taken away back-to-backs for the majority of the season.
Basketball is such a physical, grinding sport. It really is. It takes a toll on your body.
They've taken away many of the things that were in place that created sort of resting players. So they've tried to listen to their fans. Say what we will about the NBA. Adam Silver has stepped up from the beginning and been very definitive. So they came up with a system for punishment for resting players if they feel they need to. They've gotten rid of back-to-backs. They've changed the way the schedule is done. And they still remain the only league that has an actual edict that says how players have to act during the national anthem.
I was gonna be the bad guy and go there and ask, do we expect anything at all? Because LeBron obviously extremely, and he and Dwayne Wade, extremely outspoken when it comes to social issues. Is anything going to happen? But they are one of the most socially active and outwardly progressive sort of sports, they're the one that has the you must stand for the anthem rule, which I think is really interesting. But it'll be interesting. LeBron has gone out of his way to be a spokesman for things that he stands up for and believes in. It'll be very interesting to see if anything happens.
Well, the NBA they don't make a big deal about it.
Do what?
They don't make as big of a deal about it as the NFL, where it's like so taboo. Like Mark Cuban comes out and is like, yeah, in our league, it's just kind of normal. Like we don't freak out. And like we don't freak out about our advertisers. Like we
now, is that because
the
fans don't freak out, you think, Julian?
Or yeah, I guess there's a totally different demographic when it comes to NBA fans to NFL fans.
So I don't know what you're referring to, Julian.
I think we all know what I'm referring to. So
but LeBron has been, I mean, LeBron goes, you know, big statement at the ESPYs and constantly on Twitter talking about this stuff. I mean, he is pretty front and center when it comes to this kind of stuff. It's not a big deal, but it'll be interesting if they do, you know, he's had plenty of times where he's worn t-shirts, right, and warm up, to make statements. So he is he's the most, you know, the highest profile player in the world, the best player on the planet. And he's going against the team that just got traded. Like there's a moment here where maybe something happens. I don't know. I don't think it'll be crazy, but it'll be interesting.
I also wouldn't be surprised if ESPN doesn't even show it if it does.
TNT
and TNT as well. I think
Charles Barkley will make sure something happens.
They're all going to be quiet. I cannot wait. You talk about good pregame shows.
Inside the NBA is back, baby.
Inside the NBA is now better than college.
Shaq, you terrible.
I'll go. Inside the NBA is the best pregame best pregame show.
Oh, it's
in
awesome.
Existence. It is.
Except for college. Does College Game Day count?
No, yeah, not anymore. They went to New York City.
Julian's right.
I give the NBA the advantage over College Game Day. But
I just like it when Shaq is like, "How many rings you got? How many rings you got, Chuck?"
Well, 3D coming up next. They deserve all the rings. Well, I don't know what they're doing. It'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Kevin Kyle out here with us.
They got an AFC Championship
back, supporting us at the studio. Yeah, they do. Thanks for listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game, guys. Do it again tomorrow.